Hi there, I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana, an issue-oriented newsmaker radio program. It's heard weekdays on 19 radio stations with 28 signals all across our great treasure state. Thank you for clicking on the podcast. Please subscribe, and we'll do our best to keep you connected. We're also on Facebook and on the web at voicesofmontana.com, where I'd love to hear from you. Please contact me at tom@voicesofmontana.com. Tariffs have certainly been in the news. They are a double-edged sword in a lot of ways. They're impacting Montana, especially Montana Ag. They're impacting our Milk River project, as a matter of fact, too. We'll talk about that today. On one hand, you know, they do raise prices, and there's retaliation, and it can hurt some industry groups. Farmers are one that are concerned too. There are some states that are benefiting off of this. But also, you're looking long-term benefits where U.S. industries are strengthening their supply chains and giving Washington some leverage in more negotiations as well. We'll talk a bit about tariffs today as they are impacting Montana on Voices of Montana. Little snag. That's what we'll be talking about here. A little snag in the ag world when it comes to tariffs, maybe more than a little snag. Nathan Kane will join us here bit later on. Jennifer Patrick is the project manager for the Milk River Joint Board of Control. And Jen, thank you so much for coming alongside. The snag here is that federal regulations have forced the stopping of deliveries of concrete for the project up there. And this is a tariff thing. Good morning, Jen. I hope you're well. You probably encounter these kind of snags in a lot of different places, in working this project. Maybe this is just another one of those and another, day in the life kind of thing. But tell me about it and tell me how things are going.
Yeah, well, this was not on my bingo card for 2025 right now. Okay. So we have Southwest Concrete is our concrete supplier right across the border, 30 miles from the project. Easy. They met specs. They're certified. And on, I think it was August 29th, the president signed an executive order that suspended duty-free de minimis treatment. Well, we got stuck in this cycle of you have to go get a broker. Great, let's go get a broker. They broker through. The Port of Pegan that we're going through is not commercial. And so we're caught in a technicality right now of the port can't accept commercial. A broker can't broker you through a non-commercial port. So our option is to go to Sweetgrass and Around, very far, or we go through Shelby or Great Falls to bring deliveries. Browning has a concrete plant that could do small loads, but we're doing 300 yards some days.
Yeah.
So it's a shocker for us right now.
So it's one thing is a delay, so you can still get the concrete, but what type of delay are you talking about?
Well, so, technically we can get the concrete that's spec'd out through the Sweetgrass border, which is a 5-hour trip one way, and then they could go back through. The other concrete plants do not have the approved spec, aggregate, everything. This plant went through a full certification process, test slabs, test breaks, everything like that. So we need to back up and get these other plants certified, and that doesn't happen in a weekend. And so that's kind of where we're talking delays.
Oh.
So we did get a week from the Port of Pegan supervisor, the director, and CBP. We're charged the 35% tariffs, and then we are able to take this for a week, concrete for a week. So we are processing right now. We're trying to put as much on the diversion dam as we can. We're not ready on Halls Cooley for the next big pour of the walls yet. So it doesn't help us until next week. So.
And I get that. So are you hoping that you get an administrative fix here? Or do you think you might have to go all the way through getting other sites certified for this?
Yeah, we've sent out the pleas, the request for help to our congressional delegation, and they've been very engaged. Danes and Zinke have talked to their staff this morning again on it and how we move forward. The state of Montana, the governor's office, the State Department, everyone is involved. It's not you know, it's not a state issue, but our state is how can we help, what can we do, and make these phone calls. It's a federal, it's a congressional. We can't do anything on the state level here right now. So we've sent out all those pleas for our group of congressional delegates to help us, and we're hoping that we could get an exemption even for 60 days, that we can figure out how we process the correct paperwork.
Yeah. I mean, how long would it take to get you've looked at probably all the options, you know, as this problem presents itself. Getting another site certified for the kind of pour that you need, how long would that take?
You know, we've looked at the other sites. We've looked at a batch plant. We looked at travel times. We've looked at all of that. You know, you're a couple weeks minimum to get that going. And as we're cruising into winter in that area, we're right now is the best time to pour. And so that's a tough pill as well. So, yeah. You know, it's not just as easy as bringing up a mobile batch plant, setting it up, because you've got to remember the diversion dam is, you know, 10 miles down the road. You still need concrete trucks. If we put it on one site, you still need them to get to the other site. And so, you know, there's just logistical things that we didn't know we would get caught up in this, I guess, is the biggest thing.
Yeah, so. Yeah, you don't. And this has happened with the rescission on August 29th of this exemption, the de minimis exemption, you called it. What's the likelihood? What's your chances of getting an extension of 60 days, which would pretty much cover, you know, getting through that construction season?
Well, we have a very strong congressional delegation, so I'm going to put my faith in them and see if they can get us an exemption. We were under an exemption previously. I think that we got caught in a technicality. I don't think it was ever meant for something like this. And so I've got some faith in the groups working on this that they'll get something done. It's very important to all of Northern Montana. And so they know that as well.
Yeah. And I like that. And you know, the value of recognizing that importance means that everybody's collaborating in a lot of ways. And you've noted that. Jennifer Patrick is with us, a project manager for the Milk River Joint Board of Control, as they're trying to repair. It's more than just repair. I mean, the St. Mary's conveyance, 100-year-old system, the repairs, it's a different word than repair, isn't it? I mean, are you refurbishing, repairing? Why don't you give us an update here? I mean, because it goes all the way to Babb, far western Montana, where the repairs really start. And so just lay it on us.
Yeah, like you said, 100-year-old system. We're replacing the diversion dam is under the bipartisan infrastructure funding. And so that's about $100 million project there. And then we had the failure in 2024 on the siphon, and that was St. Mary's siphon. We have a siphon right next door to it that is 100 years old that we're also jumping in and repairing that is not failing, but it's 100 years old and could fail. And so, you know, we've got 29 miles of canal all on the Blackfeet Reservation. So they've been an excellent partner on this as well. But that we're trying to get repaired because that's the source of our water. It runs through Canada and then drops in above Havre and goes dry 6 out of 10 years. So without this, the Milk River from Havre to Glasgow, Nashua area is dry 6 out of 10 years. And so that's why we're putting so much into this.
And the fact that that water now, I mean, 100 years ago, you know, it was not as important, maybe, you know, it was very important, but, you know, we value it now for municipal water. We value it now for recreational water. We value it now for irrigation as well.
Well, and think also 700 miles of upland game, wildlife refuge, everything like that. You've created a beautiful valley that if you go dry 6 out of 10 years, there goes how many other things that, you know, incidental also.
The wildlife concern, the bull trout and the recovery on all those things. I'm curious as to, you know, how all of that has complicated the management of this entire system.
Well, there's a lot of voices. There's a lot of people that want to be involved. And so, you know, that everyone has a different, the joint board that I work for is irrigation, and that is our sole purpose. And then there's incidental benefits on the other side. But as far as our group, we're looking at irrigation and how to deliver this water. Fish, wildlife, parks, the conservation districts, everyone has a different thoughts on how this basin should be run. Not that any of them are bad, but we all have different, interests. And so sometimes those drive how and what projects should be done and why it should be done. And, you know, maybe the canal should be restored back to the capacity versus the diversion dam happening. But the diversion dam has to happen because we have to have fish-friendly features for the endangered bull trout. And so they're just, with all of the different voices involved, you get very different opinions and directions.
Have you bumped into any other tariff restrictions on the construction?
No. Yes, actually the gates come from Canada, the steel. There's some steel tariffs and stuff, and so those they have bumped into those, but we were well aware of those that would happen for the diversion dam, the fish screens and gates. But other than that, we haven't, just the concrete, because we're only taking the concrete here. The rest of it's coming from Portland or local sources.
Gotcha. What about other snags? Because this one is we see this, right? But there's probably little snags here and there that you bumped into. Anything that comes to mind, Jen, that signified how people were really together on this project and worked together to get over that little hump?
You know, we had the federal government shutdown. That was a big one. And all of the bill funding was frozen. Our congressional delegations worked really, really hard. I mean, there's still money all the way across the U.S. that's frozen and working through the process. They got our process through very quickly. They worked hard on that. But the state of Montana stepped up, and we were able to take the loan that we have from them and able to continue the process. So we delivered the St. Mary siphon product. We weren't going to have any water in the basin at all, and we were able to get a half of the irrigation, which zero to a half is huge for the farmers and ranchers. So that was a big one where we hit a snag. We were able to work out of it in a couple months, but the state really was the hero on that one, coming to keep that going forward.
Nice. Good to hear that.
Yeah.
So just to kind of recap here real quick, then I got less than a minute, but you're not in a place right now where you need the concrete immediately, but that day is coming, right?
Yeah, the diversion dam's pouring right now. I'm sure they're going to get as many pours in as they can. They were forming last week when they got shut down, so they're moving. We don't have our first pour until the 16th, which is 300 yards on the walls. And so we're trying to figure out a solution there by the 16th. So we have time, and keep reaching out to your congressional delegation, because they're the ones who are going to make this happen at the federal level.
Can't thank you enough, Jen, for popping in this morning, but also for the work. And again, give the guys and gals a pat in the back for us, okay?
Will do. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. As we look at tariffs and how they are impacting Montana, Nathan Kane joins us now, along with Andy Schwab in studio, ag broadcaster. Andy had talked to Nathan about this story that was just recently reported on. Andy, good morning to you. How are you,
sir? Good morning. Thank you, Tom. As you mentioned, this is a very important a situation happening for many producers. Agriculture is being affected by it. I'm sure there's other industries being affected, as we heard from Jen Patrick earlier, but I think Nathan Kane can tell the story a lot better than I can, because he was personally hit by this. But tariffs are cutting into the bottom line of producers that are already having thin margins right now.
Good morning, Nathan. How you doing, sir?
Oh, good morning, Tom. I'm doing pretty well. First day of winter wheat season here. So I'm currently in the tractor getting some winter wheat in the ground.
I love it. You can talk and farm at the same time, huh?
Well, we'll see what happens.
Right. Let's not jump ahead of ourselves.
Let's not jinx them.
Yeah. How's the soil look? How's it look as you put that seed in the ground? I'll ask that first.
Well, you know, it's I'm getting into moisture here, but with all the rain that we did get in July and August, it's amazing how quickly that can disappear on you. So we definitely will need that rain, and hopefully that is coming here later this week. So could definitely always use moisture, and we'll take it when we can get it here.
Longtime Montana egg producer and also currently treasurer of the National Association of Wheat Growers. Nathan, I appreciate the advocacy. Why don't you start from the beginning and tell us what you ran into and a specific instance where tariffs are impacting ag in Montana.
Yeah, sure, Tom. So, personal story here. We run a Seedmaster drill, which is manufactured up in Canada. And, you know, this is nothing new to a lot of Montanans. And in fact, I think it's also with a lot of just bordering states. We've got North Dakota, Idaho, Washington, and probably a few states, you know, below us or so that really do highly rely on Canadian manufacturing. And really when it comes to air drills, you know, they're kind of the top dogs when it comes to building these big air drills for, you know, bigger acres. And we're talking, you know, Seedmaster, Borgo, you know, and I'm sure there's others, but I needed updated parts to be able to seed winter wheat here this fall. And without those, I would be stuck without being able to use our drill. And so I ordered the parts, you know, weeks ago during harvest, knowing that I was going to need them and put them together. Maybe on a rain delay, I can, you know, get this thing put together and be ready for seeding. Well, you know, got a break from cutting and ran up to Canada to implement dealer there to grab my parts, and no problem getting up into Canada. The problem was then it was getting back into the States here. I kind of got kicked around from one office to the next. And the talk was is basically missing what I brought and I'm bringing back into the States here. And it was $30,000 worth of parts. And so they didn't really look, you know, they looked at the invoice and the itemized deal. And they wanted to see, you know, what it was. But they said, well, it looks like you're going to have to pay 40% tariff on that $30,000. So I'm looking at, you know, paying $12,000 to cross the border. That was a big thing. You know, I literally was actually calling Senator Dane's office at the time. I'm looking, you know, to see what is going on here. The big thing that I did notice though up there is, you know, a lot of the agents truly don't know exactly what to do or what to say. You know, there is one agent that did tell me that, you know, it sure would be nice to know from the top what we're actually supposed to be doing here. So there is a lot of confusion actually on their end. And, you know, I don't blame them any which way. And I do get what this administration is trying to do. You know, they really are trying to bring back steel and things here. But here's the problem that we have in agriculture currently is we are getting hit from every single side right now. You know, our commodity prices are tanking. Our inputs like fertilizer are skyrocketing. And then when we heavily rely on some of these ag products and ag manufacturing out of Canada, I just feel like there's got to be some kind of concessions. Yeah, okay, if they want to get us back into some more American-made stuff, that's going to take a while, for one thing, for something like that to ramp up. But also, there has to be some kind of concession, some way of being able to maybe trend and move that way and not just get slapped with a 40% tariff to keep the drill going. You know, food is a national security thing, and we need to continue to feed our people, and we need the tools to be able to do that. And currently we are, like I said, we're heavily reliant on Canada on some of these things. And so they can't just be taken away or just added cost. And in fact, I tell you, Tom, that 40% tariff, I'm actually hearing it's actually a 50% tariff now. It's a big cost that we cannot afford, and it's just a big hit on our bottom line that we really don't have much of a bottom line anymore currently. So it's just ag is struggling, and this is not anything helpful to ag currently.
Yeah, I appreciate hearing that, too. Nathan Cain from Nathan Cain, who's a producer in the Loma area. That's northeast of Fort Benton. Served with the Montana Grain Growers, treasurer of the National Association of Wheat Growers.
Yeah, and Nathan, I think you mentioned it too. I mean, not only is it impacting the bottom line, which right now the wheat prices are the same price as they were back in the, I think, the 70s, decades ago. We're seeing the same price to the producer right now as we were decades and decades ago, but the input prices right now are exponentially higher than what they used to be. When I was talking to Kira Berkland with Montana Grain Growers Association Policy Director, she was saying that the big problem, too, you may have mentioned this, is that it's trying to figure out where the metal was melted. Is that what I heard right?
So, yeah, you're exactly right, Andy. So that is, I'm glad you brought that up. That is one of the big problems, too. This isn't just on new or used equipment or parts. It's all steel, all aluminum, and you are supposed to have some kind of documentation crossing the border back into the States of saying where this stuff was melted, so where it originated from. And, you know, I called the company Seedmaster and asked them, and, you know, they deal with several brokers where they get their steel from, and maybe they could do some digging in for us, but it's a hard process to do it, let alone think about buying something like a used piece of equipment. Good luck ever finding what that, came from, the steel came from. So, no, it makes it extremely difficult. And, you know, if I knew what the troubles I'd be running into to grab these parts last week, what I would be facing, I wouldn't have gone up there and grabbed them. And really what it would have came down to then is I wouldn't be seeding winter wheat currently. Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of sentiment of, there's a lot of farmers right now that aren't too excited about seeding winter wheat. And I'm, you know, I'd be right in that category now too. You mentioned Andy and how low the wheat prices are, and they're extremely low. And we're getting close to a cash price, a current cash price right now, that's getting really close to dipping below $4 cash price right now. Jeez. So that's, you know, that's unheard of. That's just incredibly difficult. Like you said, when we're facing, just costs that are just so much higher than, like you said, the 70s when the prices were that low. You know, it's just our machinery has gone up like exponentially, you know, ever since, you know, the COVID, right? Everything really did increase just exponentially.
Yeah.
And the problem is typically what you see is when you see commodity prices come down, you do tend to see other, you know, input prices come down, but it's so much slower. Well, but when there's ever a mention of any kind of tariff, our input prices go up. And that's what we're kind of facing currently with our fertilizer, is it has skyrocketed and we're paying extremely high cost in fertilizer because of tariffs. And so that's just another way that the farmers are getting hit pretty hard due to tariffs, let alone, you know, trying to grab some parts from Canada. So it's kind of a tough situation in a lot of areas.
Well, and as you said, I mean, they're asking questions about where this steel was melted. They don't know what to do or what to say at this time. And, that makes it real hard to conduct business. Nathan, I got a couple of questions here. One would be, can you get a set aside for some of these things? You're with the National Association of Wheat Growers. You yourself, as well as every farmer in Montana, they can bend the ear of our national delegation. What about the National Association? What are they talking? Where do they see some relief? Or can they get some setbacks for especially some of these, the fertilizer costs, where you're looking at real drops in producer profitability because of?
Yeah, so I mean, right, that is part of our job, right? We're lobbying for ag with the National Association of Wheat Growers, and we are doing a fly-in. I actually will be flying to D.C. here a week from today. And it's a multi-commodity fly-in, so you have all the commodities, the corn, the soybeans, the sorghum, wheat, all of them coming in, and hopefully with, you know, kind of a one voice of ag is hurting. These tariffs currently are hurting. There's got to be some kind of concessions to at least let ag not get hit by these tariffs, that we can actually just keep doing what we need to be doing, and that's producing food. and some relief. So, you know, we did have a SDRP payment recently. It was a 35% of the actual payment. And there are different payments like that. There's an ECAP I'm going to be talking about. There's an ECAP payment. This was 5 or so, 6 months ago. And that was 85% of the payment. And so looking to see if we're going to be able to get that rest of the 15%, you know, just anything that really can help farmers currently. You know, none of us farmers really are looking for a handout from the government is what it comes down to. We don't want that. What we want is a fair trade. We want good prices on our commodities, and we want reasonable prices for be able to grow food, meaning, you know, our input at decent prices that we can afford to actually grow the food and make somewhat of a profit. And that's just, you know, that's the biggest struggle we have now. We have high interest rates for operating loans. We got these tariff issues that we're dealing with and high input costs and machinery costs that just skyrocketed. So we have all these things hitting us from every end and just squeeze this down to, you know, put winter wheat in the ground right now as I am. And right now I'm looking at, okay, well, how much of a loss is that going to be for us? You know, but I'm keeping up with our rotation with hopes that things will turn around. And by the time harvest comes next year, we'll be facing better prices. Although that's the same thought I had last year, and it wasn't the case this year. So we just can't keep going on this way. And there definitely has to be relief. And so you can bet, you know, this is number one on my list. To talk to our delegates is farming is struggling. You know, we do need relief. And what is that going to look like? You know, we need relief on any kind of tariff that's, you know, bringing fertilizer in, bringing parts in, whatever we need to keep farming. We need relief on those things so that we're not continuing to get squeezed.
I appreciate that. Yeah, we like to eat too, you know, so I know you'll have an audience up there, that's for sure. So when's that flying again? It's next week?
Yeah, so I'll be flying on the 15th and really hitting the hill on the 16th.
All right. Yeah. I know our Northern Ag Network will cover that. Andy Schwab with us here, ag broadcaster. You're doing a lot of coverage on that. I'd like to hear more about that as well, because like I say, it impacts us in a lot of ways, you know, especially at the dinner table. So thanks
for... Absolutely, it.
Thanks for feeding America, Nathan. I appreciate it too. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate it. We love what we do. You know, as farmers, we love growing food, and we do it well. But you know, unfortunately, I am hearing where there's a lot of farmers struggling, and there's a lot of farmers going out of business. And so, we need to help that. We want to continue the family farm, and so we're just going to push, you know, and get the, you know, right policies in place that we need to allow family farms to continue to thrive.
I think that'll be effective. I think it will. Nathan, thanks. Thanks for, you know, like I say, for farming and for advocating for farmers too. And I look forward to chatting with you down the road, okay?
Appreciate it. Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.